It's time!
Jones for three. Oh, it drops and falls through. Here's Jones, a step back and splash.
Oh boy.
Razzle dazzle, falls through. This is a day for Mason Jones. He can't miss.
Well, welcome into the basketball podcast of Mid-America. Seth Campbell joined alongside Scotty Bordelon, and we are trying to keep you hot during this cold season, trying to stay as hot as Mason Jones was against Tulsa. The Razorbacks with a huge 98-79 victory. Mason Jones dropping 41 points. We have to start there, Scotty. What did you think of Mason Jones' performance?
He was outstanding, and his 41 points, I think, are the second most scored by a Razorbacks player in Bud Walton Arena, and only to Rodney Clark's 51 back in 2009, I believe. He was great. Like, it's funny. Like, you watch him at the beginning of games, and if that first shot drops for him, then he's just like, he just starts rolling, and he kind of falls into this confidence where he's like, every time I touch the ball, every time the ball leaves my hands, I feel like it's going in. And he was like, he got his 41 and he was really efficient. He was like 12 out of 18, 5 of 11 from three. And he got to the free throw line quite a bit. And he's absolutely money from the line. I think he was 12 out of 13. He missed his last one. And he was asked about missing that one free throw after the game. And he was like, that's one of the things he'll remember most about the game, is because it really hurt him a lot. He was great. The three right before halftime was huge. Could have been a 4-point play, I think, but the officials chose to swallow their whistle. He was fantastic, and I think he was a pretty easy pick for SEC Player of the Week.
Yeah, 41 points. He could have had 42. As you said, 12 of 13 from the free throw line, 5 of 11 from behind the arc, 12 of 18 field goals overall. That's just an impressive day all the way around. And, you know, the Razorbacks moved the ball quicker this entire game. Like, the pace of play for this game, you could almost tell that this team had a week off and had been in those training camps, because they were a specimen of what musclemen would like for them to be throughout the entire season.
Right, and I think that's one thing that Arkansas focused on during its week between games. You know, obviously they got back into their training camp type practices Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then kind of backed off on Thursday, Friday leading up to the games. But Musselman said it in his press conference after the game. He was kind of, in analyzing some of Arkansas's past games before Tulsa, he noticed that, you know, Arkansas was playing at almost like a grinded out type of pace. And Jimmy Witt and Jalen Harris, whoever's bringing the ball up the floor, was kind of walking it up. And they became kind of this slow, methodical team for a few games. And Musselman said, like, they can do that if they want and maybe have some pretty good success with it. But ideally, they want to be pushing the ball across half court, you know, 25, 26 seconds on the shot, left on the shot clock. And that, obviously, you get the ball into your half of the court quicker. I think that helps with offensive efficiency. I remember talking to Jimmy Carter about that. There have been some studies done that show if teams get the ball across half court, you know, like within the first 4 or 5 seconds of the shot clock, then their offensive efficiency numbers go up. And we saw that on Saturday. They had their best offensive efficiency rating of the season. I think it was 128.4, which is really good. Arkansas has not had a number near that high in its other 9 games. And it also helped that Isaiah Joe got going a little bit too. He had his third 20-point game. So, and I think going back to the pace, I was looking at my Hoopland site. According to them, Arkansas had its most offensive possessions in any game outside of the two overtime games and the season opener against Rice, when they also scored 90-plus points. So, I mean, I think they got the pace where they wanted it to. And they were outstanding at the beginning of the game and kind of just they knocked Tulsa out at that point. And I don't think Tulsa got any closer than 9 the rest of the way. So pace played a big part in that win.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think Tulsa was in this game after really the first 8 minutes of the game. Arkansas right. came out, started out strong, and really, you know, put their mark on this game, how they wanted to play this game. They were going to make sure that, you know, we are going to control the tempo. We are going to control really every aspect of this game. We haven't been in Bud Walton Arena in, it was over 2 weeks, yeah. I believe. So, yeah. And so they wanted to get back into there on a Saturday crowd, and they really did control the game. Like, there was an opportunity for Tulsa towards the end of that first half. Arkansas, I think, kind of realized that they were putting it on Tulsa a little bit, and they kind of let off the gas just a tad. They had a few turnovers, and Tulsa cut it within single digits. But
yeah,
then
they
Mason,
cut it to 9. They cut it to 9, I know, in the second half at one point, and then Arkansas was able to answer, though, so but, put the game away.
Yeah, and then, you know, at the end of the first half, Mason Jones is huge. Three-pointer, the buzzer beater, that was a buzzer beater. That was a big play as well. So it was all around a fantastic game. As you mentioned, let's go ahead and go and talk about Isaiah Joe kind of getting out of that funk. He was 4 of 10 from three-point range, just 40%. And he really seemed to find a rhythm earlier in the game, and that kind of carried over.
Yeah, it's also it's kind of like Mason. It was good to see Isaiah have some success from the perimeter early. And that got Arkansas off to a great start. I think they jumped out to a 21-5 lead. And I think those two guys had all 21 of their points. I think they got out to a – maybe it was like a 15-5 lead, 14-5 lead. And I think those two guys had all their points. I know Jimmy Witt and Desi Sills had buckets to push the lead to 21-5. But Isaiah's playing pretty well in December. I think he's gradually scored more per game. He had 16 – in the first game of the month, and he had 18 at Western Kentucky on 5 threes on a career. I think he tied a career high with 14 attempts at Western Kentucky, and then he knocked down 3 of his first 4 against Tulsa, which was good to see. And I think we mentioned it like last week. I've been waiting on one of those games where Isaiah just has a day where it seems like he's just unconscious from 3. And he missed a couple of really good looks toward the end of the game that could have pushed him, you know, could have made a 20-point game, a 26, 28-point game for him. He was great. And he's shooting the ball. I think he's 12 out of 34 from 3 this month, which is 35%. That's not bad. He shot, I think he was 33% in November. So his numbers are starting to rise. And in the last two games, he's shooting nearly 38%. And that's on 24 attempts, I think. So that's a 38% is a pretty good number for a high volume shooter. And the thing that I liked was those 4 threes that he hit were from different spots on the floor. I think it was left wing, top of the key, right wing, right corner. That right corner 3 was the first one he'd made all season after 14 attempts. Right. That's kind of crazy.
We just have to point it out here on the podcast, and I'll go ahead and make one.
Yeah. And all 4 of his threes were catch and shoot. And he was 4 of 8 on catch and shoot threes. Those 4 threes were a season high in that category. And he got it done defensively too. Like he had 3 steals, and he was diving on the floor in the first half, knocked a ball near half court, tipped it out to Mason Jones for a layup too. So, I mean, even he got his shot going a little bit, but I mean, his defense is still there and has been all year.
Yeah. He does play fantastic defense. I mean, he came up with 3 steals against Tulsa. And, you know, the 5 steals for the Razorbacks kind of shows you that they were having more active on defense. Musselman wasn't necessarily pleased with how they were performing at Western Kentucky. So I think that's another one of those things that happens when you go back to that training camp, and that training camp mindset is you can ingrain into these guys, this is how we're going to play. And they went back and really hard-nosed defense that we haven't seen since really the first 5 games of the year.
Right, and I'll say this. I know Arkansas has been averaging, I think they turned teams over like an average of 19 times a game going into Tulsa. Mm-hmm. And Tulsa only turned it over 13 times, but what Arkansas did was they made Tulsa pay immediately for those turnovers. I think 23 points off those 13 turnovers. Mm-hmm. And they got out and ran when they could. They were plus 19 I believe, in fast break points. So they were active defensively, and whenever they got the chance to run, they did. And I think that was kind of a direct result of Musselman just being like, hey, we got to pick the pace up and make teams play at our pace and not necessarily the other way around.
And we've talked about this man a lot, Jimmy Witt, and he's really deserved the credit that we've given him. But I almost can't say it enough. He is, I think, the glue that is holding this team together right now. He had 11 points, 5 of 8 shooting. He knows his shot. And he knows, and there's so much value in a player that knows his role and knows his shot and executes it to the highest level, like Jimmy Witt can. He can run the offense, or he can flip it and run the 5. And when you have a guy like that that is so dynamic and can give you so many options, and then if you ever need a bucket in the mid-range, he can get you there. And that mid-range jumper opens up so many other things, because at some point I was rewatching the game and the broadcasters were talking about, at some point when Jimmy Witt gets into, you know, that 15-foot range, he's like, in conference play, people might have to start doubling him.
Right.
And are you going to double Jimmy?
Tulsa actually did double him at one point.
And are you going to double Jimmy Witt and leave Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe open?
Yeah, I don't know if you're going to do that.
So, like, him being the dynamic player that he can be has really opened up, I think, the offense for everybody else.
Yeah, for sure. And it alleviates a lot of the playmaking pressure from Mason and Isaiah and even Desi to an extent. And what I've really liked about Jimmy's game, and Eric Musselman's kind of talked about it too, is he can score and they don't have to like run plays for him. They don't have to run a set for him. He's been really impressive. Just like, I think I've said this before, he just kind of freelances. And I remember one possession on Saturday, Arkansas was trying to get into a set, and I'm not sure exactly what happened, but they weren't getting the action that they wanted. But Jimmy was kind of almost isolated on the left side of the floor with his defender, and he just drove right by him and then pulled up for a jumper and hit it. And those kind of buckets are just, they're invaluable, you know, just when you're not able to get exactly what you want when you want it. And let me see, I've got a shot chart right here. He was 5 of 7 on mid-range jumpers the other day. And I think going into the Tulsa game, he was shooting right around 48%. So that mid-range jumper is deadly. And I think twice against Tulsa, he hit mid-range jumpers on back-to-back possessions. And so Tulsa didn't really have an answer for him. And he's so long, and he's athletic enough and long enough where he can kind of get to his spot and rise up. And a lot of his shots aren't even contested. So people may want to say that the mid-range game has died out of basketball, but Jimmy Witt's been phenomenal there.
Jimmy Witt has got it on life support right now.
He is
bringing it back, and he's also doing his thing, what he's supposed to do on the defensive side, in getting rebounds. He's third on the team last game against Tulsa with 5 rebounds. All of everything that he is doing is invaluable to the Razorbacks and their offense and the way that they move the game. And I really think it also, we talked about who it opens up for: Mason Jones, for Isaiah Joe, for Desi Sills. And I think it takes pressure off of Jalen Harris as well, because he isn't just going to be the guy that is running the point the entire time and everybody's going to rely on him. And Witt being so dynamic, it does help. Before we move on, I did want to say, you know, Scotty and I played the percentages, what was that, 2 weeks ago now, Scotty?
Yeah, it was 2 weeks ago.
And we both said that Jamario Bell had an over 50% chance of getting into the game, yep. And Jamario Bell made it into the game, even really a game sooner than we thought.
Yeah.
So Jamario Bell gets into the game. You know,
doesn't have a KenPom page, which is kind of disappointing, but he'll get there.
Hey, he has a 0 for 0, 0, 0, 0. He did have 1 personal foul. And 1 block.
Yeah, I know he had a block. Yeah, on his first defensive possession, I think.
That was his stat line for the day. He wanted to get in the stat book with a block and a personal foul, so there's not zeros all the way across. Obukwelu got in as well. Stevens got in.
He had a 3 blocked. It was kind of an ugly deal.
But it was everybody getting in against Tulsa. All right, moving on. This game going into Little Rock, Scotty, against Valparaiso. What do you want to see from the Razorbacks?
I don't know if you'll be able to completely replicate what you did offensively against Tulsa, but you got to play with that same energy and just kind of smother Valparaiso out of the gates. They've not played, or they've not beaten. I think their best win of the year is against Toledo to begin the year. Other than that, they don't have a they have one win inside the KenPom top 200, and they've lost on the road about 26 to Nevada, and they lost in overtime to Cincinnati. So I mean, this Valpo team has played some tough competition, I guess, if you want to say. They've played several top 100 KenPom top 100 teams. But Arkansas should be able to handle Valpo. Valpo actually plays High Point on Wednesday, projected to win that game, I think, on the road. But Arkansas, just if you can get solid defensive energy, just like what you played with against Tulsa, you know, to begin the game, Arkansas was smothering. They just absolutely smothered Tulsa. And I know Valpo's got a kid named Javon Freeman Liberty. And I was going back and watching a video of when Musselman gave Mason Jones the level 5 chain for the level 5 player of the game. Looked at the whiteboard. They already had Freeman Liberty's name up on the whiteboard. So they're
just wow.
Yeah, they're definitely game planning for him. The key is to shut him down. That's what the whiteboard said. You know, he's a 35% 3-point shooter, 53% inside the arc. So he's definitely their go-to guy. According to KenPom, he's taking 36% of their shots when he's on the floor, which ranks top 15 in the country. So he's gonna let some shots go. He's almost taken 200 shots.
Wow.
10 games into the year. So he's a high volume guy. Arkansas's got to do a good job eliminating him, and then taking away, you know, some of their secondary players, some of their role players. Just defensively, just continue to play with active hands, play with verticality on the interior, and then obviously you got to knock some shots down. I want to see if Isaiah Joe can continue to build on what he's done this month. He was great last year. I didn't go to the game in Little Rock last year because of a buddy's wedding, but Isaiah, I think it was 5 of 6 from 3. So, you know, maybe see if Isaiah Joe can have one of his takeover games, and, you know, maybe build some steam going in Indiana.
All right, we're going to play a little game now here on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. We're going to spice things up a little bit. This time, we're not going to play the percentages. Scotty, we are going to buy or sell. And the first buy or sell is less controversial than Little Rock game in football. But the Little Rock game in basketball, are you buying it or selling it?
I'm buying it. There's people in South Arkansas, just being a South Arkansas kid, can't always get to Fayetteville. Like, there's kind of a, at least where I grew up, there was almost like a perception that Fayetteville is like 10 hours away. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it takes forever to get there. I know my little brother thinks that. He lives in Arkadelphia. He thinks Fayetteville is like 8 to 10 hours away. That's why he doesn't come up here near as much as I'd like. But the Little Rock game just is, I mean, it's obviously it's more centralized, where I feel like more people in the state can get here. And I don't know. I like the, I've not covered a game, an Arkansas game in North Little Rock before, but I've been to one. I think it was when I can't remember who Arkansas played, but it was right around Christmas time and the building was packed. It was a fun atmosphere, fun environment. I like it, and I'm kind of eager to see what kind of crowd Arkansas is going to have on Saturday. I can't imagine that there's, you know, too many tickets that are still available, but you know, I like it, and maybe I've got a little bit of bias being a South Arkansas kid. And, you know, Little Rock's just an hour and a half away from where I grew up, and went to several games there when I was younger.
I'm buying it as well. There's multiple things that go into this. First of all, it's not like football where you get 5 or 6 home games and you have to give one of them to Little Rock. It's not that. And you have, how many home games do they play? Like roughly around 20 or so.
Arkansas, yeah, I think it was 18 or 19 this year.
So you get roughly around 20 home games. You can give one of those to Little Rock. And like Scotty said, you have the people that aren't located near Fayetteville. They can't always go see a game. And being from Little Rock, I agree with Scotty. I've seen... As a fan, I went to 2 or 3. I can't remember. I watched Arkansas play, I think it was number 3, Illinois, back in 2004.
Oh, nice.
In North Little Rock. Yeah, they got beat by quite a bit.
Was that the Darren Williams?
I'm trying to think.
D. Brown teams?
I'm trying to think who was on that Illinois team. But they were number one before the week before. And I don't know why they fell to number three. But it was a...
You said that was during the 2003 season?
2004.
Okay, 2004.
We're doing some quick recon here on the Basketball Podcast in Mid-America, but I'm buying it as well. It's a fun atmosphere.
Oh, yeah, that was Deron Williams, D. Brown. Yeah, Luther Head.
They were salty.
Yeah, that was a good team.
Yeah, Arkansas ended up losing here, I can see on this score, 72-60. But anyway, it's a good game. I've also seen them lose to Baylor, so maybe I shouldn't go. They always seem to lose. But it's unique. Like, I think of Little Rock kind of more of a basketball town than a football town in a way, because there are a lot of kids there. There are a lot of families there that just grow up playing basketball. Like, basketball is a popular sport in the Little Rock, in the capital city. And so I think it's more of a basketball town than a football town. And I think that people enjoy that game. And even when Arkansas is just not fantastic, I remember I worked a game there 2 or 3 years ago. And I think it was the year. No, Arkansas may have been able to go to the NCAA that year, but it was almost packed. And, you know, granted, there is no television or you're only going to get it on radio, but I think it's a cool atmosphere. If you're around the area, you want to see something different, I suggest going.
Yeah, that makes it interesting, too, that it's not really televised. I know a lot of people don't like it, and, you know, I don't particularly like it because I have to keep the shot chart during the game. Instead of going back and watching it, but you've got to buy a ticket to go see the show this week. And so that makes it, I don't know if unique is the right word, but it makes it interesting too. You know, you just kind of got to be there or read Whole Hog Sports to find out what happened.
Ooh, tease there, wholehogsports.com.
I'll be down there on Saturday. I'm looking forward to it.
The reason why it's not televised, in case you were just wondering, I worked for Razorback Sports Network. As a student, and so most of your games that you watch online or that are broadcast over the television are actually broadcast by students. ESPN paid a lot of money to the universities to build them studios so that they could produce all of this stuff and that the students can run it. The problem is that is an off-campus site. Therefore, there is no studio built into what is now, I think, Simmons Bank Arena.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would have to bring in a TV truck, and ESPN is not really interested in broadcasting Arkansas versus Valparaiso. So that is the reason why it is not on TV. Now, if you brought in number three, Illinois, you might get it on TV.
Yeah, bring Darren Williams, Brian Cook, Luther Head back, maybe.
You might get it on TV, but Valpo, not having. So we're both buying the Little Rock game. Conference play is about to start here, Scotty.
Yep.
Arkansas picked 11th. Before the season to finish 11th in the conference. Buy or sell Arkansas finishing 11th or worse in conference?
I'm selling that. I think Arkansas finished better than 11th. Like, where they finish, like, I think they'll finish top 10 at least. I think it's kind of what we've seen. It's kind of been a down non-conference portion of the schedule so far for the SEC. I know Tennessee just lost at home to Memphis, which granted Memphis is a really good team. Florida is kind of struggling a little bit. I know that they beat the brakes off of Providence on the road or in Brooklyn last night or on Tuesday night, but I don't know. Like, Alabama's struggling too. I think they're under 500. Like, I don't think they've been above 500 all season. Auburn is, I think, one of the last few unbeaten teams, mm-hmm. So they're looking pretty good. I think the opportunity is there for Arkansas to maybe surprise some people in the way that they play in conference. I just wonder if Arkansas's lack of interior depth and lack of quality interior depth is gonna bite them in the backside at some point, because you're gonna see some talented front lines from, you know, Florida's got Kerry Blackshear, LSU's really talented along the front line.
Adding Kentucky.
Yeah, Kentucky. Kentucky's always got guys on its interior, even though I think they've got a kid named Nate Sestina. He looks to be a little bit susceptible to, you know, forwards taking him off the bounce, which, does Arkansas have one of those? Man, I don't know that we can say that at this point, but that might be a weak link there. But they've obviously got pretty good depth and elite guard play. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting, but I figure Arkansas will finish in the top 10 for sure.
I agree. I'm selling that as well. Scotty, you nailed all of the points there. Arkansas, I'm assuming, probably finish around a 7 or 8 in the NCAA tournament berth. Possible, just kind of depends on how deep the conference is this year. I think if you can get 8 teams in, then I think Arkansas is going to the NCAA tournament. If SEC gets 7 teams in, I'm probably thinking they go to the NCAA tournament. If they get 6, I don't know.
Look, right now you've got half the league at 500 or worse. Missouri's 9-9. Ole Miss is 8 and is no, I'm sorry. I misread this. So Texas A&M is 4-5. Vandy's 6-3. Vanderbilt's got a home loss to Tulsa on its schedule. South Carolina 7-4. Alabama, like I mentioned, 4-5. Georgia is going to be dangerous because they've got Anthony Edwards. And if you've not seen Anthony Edwards play, go watch Anthony Edwards play. He is a freak. You'll see him in the NBA next year. Ole Miss is 7-3, but they've got a 78-37 loss to Oklahoma State on its schedule. They've also lost to Memphis and Butler.
Excuse me, 78-37 loss?
Yes, on a neutral floor to Oklahoma State.
Dang.
So, yeah, and that prompted Kermit Davis to come out after a game and say that, you know, he was basically say that he was really embarrassed for, like, the entire program, the entire school, everything.
Yikes.
That was not a banner day for them. But, I mean, at the top of the league, you got Auburn. Auburn's 9-0, Kentucky's 8-1, Tennessee's 7-2, Florida 7-3. Maybe Florida will start getting it together. Florida's lost to Florida State, UConn, and Butler. I kind of understand the Florida State and the Butler loss, but I feel like Florida should be able to handle UConn, even though that game was on the road. So the league, while it might not have a super dominant team, is going to be pretty good again, but the bottom of the league is going to be – I mean, I think it's going to be – there's going to be a barrier between the good teams and those that aren't.
So you got to stay away from those bad losses. You need quality wins, and you have to beat the teams that are at the bottom of the conference. And that's your recipe for the Razorbacks.
Win the games that you're supposed to win, for sure.
You want to get into,
and maybe take a couple that maybe you weren't projected to win.
If you want to get into the NCAA tournament, I think that's what you have to do. All right, buy or sell. So Scotty and I both bought that the Little Rock game is a good idea for the Razorbacks. We both sold that the Razorbacks will finish 11th or worse in conference. What about, there's three non-conference games left. Valparaiso, Indiana, and TCU. Indiana and TCU are the main ones really left on the schedule. Buying that Arkansas takes 2 or 3 from those three teams.
They should. They should, because 2 of those 3 are at least in your home state. And the TCU game, just depending, I'm going to definitely keep track of what TCU's doing. I think they're ranked 56th according to KenPom. They're 8-2 on the year. They don't particularly have an impressive win on their resume yet. They've lost 2 games to KenPom top 100 teams, Clemson in overtime and USC. KenPom says on a semi home floor. But that game's at home. I know it's not the easiest game taking a break from conference play to play another Power 5 school, but you know that game is in your building. That game is sold out. If you play well enough to get the crowd involved, then I don't see how Arkansas drops that one. You should handle Valpo without a problem. The only question I have is obviously it's Indiana, and I don't expect Arkansas to go to Indiana and win.
No.
Indiana's got a freshman. His name, I wrote it earlier, is Trace Jackson Davis. He is a problem. 6'9 forward. He had, I think, Indiana beat Nebraska in overtime. I think it was last week or over the weekend. He had 25-15. And he's really, really good around the basket. He's almost shooting 65% inside the arc. And then they returned several of those guards that they brought to Fayetteville last year, and the Arkansas saw twice a season ago. So that'll be a really fun game. I just if Arkansas shows well in that game, I think it'll give some people a bit of optimism going into conference play, which I'm really excited for. You start conference play, I think, with a sold-out game against Texas A&M, so it should be fun.
Yeah, I'm not doing great for our show here, as I'm agreeing with you again. I think that Arkansas should beat TCU, and then they should beat Valpo, and I don't really see how the Razorbacks are going to beat Indiana, but it's possible. Indiana is just in a strange stretch right now in that they come off of this stretch where they play Florida State, Wisconsin, Connecticut, Nebraska, Notre Dame, and then Arkansas. All before conference play starts. They're going to play six Power Five teams before conference play starts.
Well, it's about time they played somebody. You know what I mean? Like their first five games of the year, the best team they played was Princeton, and they're ranked 199 on KenPom. But that Florida State win, I think you're going to see that by the end of the year turn out pretty good. And then that 20-point loss to Wisconsin, that's just a result of having played next to no one and that being your first game of the season. So I think they were stunned a little bit in that game. But UConn win on a neutral floor might look pretty good. And I've not been impressed with Nebraska, but, you know, I guess teams just have one of those nights where, you know, defensively things just aren't working. And, you know, they beat Nebraska in overtime, but Nebraska's lost games to, like, UC Riverside and Southern Utah, George Mason. I mean, those are pretty ugly. But, you know, take a win, you know, any way you can get them, especially in conference.
No joke. All right. Last one here as we wrap it up on the basketball podcast of Mid-America presented by Whole Hog Sports. Arkansas came out in the initial net rankings and they were ranked number 23. That's pretty good. If you stay around that area, around the 20s, 23s, you're almost guaranteed to be into the NCAA tournament with an at-large bid. You really kind of want to hang around at least the top 40, Scotty. So buy or sell, Arkansas stays in the top 40 in the net rankings this year.
That's a good question. I don't really know. I don't know. I mean, I figured they could hang around for a while. I think you got to avoid losing streaks, like stacking losses on top of each other, and then those losses, you know, being lopsided. And no, I was a little bit surprised that Arkansas was in the top 25 of the net rankings when they first came out. And it's kind of weird to see a team like Kentucky at 58. Like, that's a little weird. And Virginia, I think, is like in the 80s, right?
Evansville, baby.
Yeah.
Back to her,
yeah,
Kentucky.
Yeah, Kentucky's just still having nightmares over Evansville. They're playing well now. I don't know. I want to just cop out and say I don't know, and I want to wait and see, but I'll buy it. I think Arkansas will – you know, if they just go to Indiana and they show well, I don't think that's going to end up being a bad loss, especially if you play well. I think people will remember that. It's just you got to avoid the conference losing streaks. And I think this metric is it's kind of made up of like offensive defensive efficiency plus who you played, where you played, and like margin. So just don't get blown out.
Play well.
Don't get blown out. Yeah, win the games you're supposed to, and I think everything will take care of itself.
Go into Indiana and play well, and things will work out for you.
Indiana, I think I wrote this morning, is the game time for that Arkansas-Indiana game is set. That's 5 o'clock Central. Indiana's 9-0 at home, so they've done, you know, again, they've not really played anyone at home outside of Florida State, but they're going to be a tough out at home. I mean, they were a tough out for Arkansas, or they were tough for Arkansas to kind of hang around with last year. They lost a lot, but they've still got really good guard play, and that Trace Davis Jackson kid is an animal. So Arkansas will have to control him.
All right. Well, that is it. I have to answer that question, don't I? I will. I was hoping you were going to say sell because I was going to buy, and we could be different. But this turned out to be not the greatest of buy or sells because I am buying as well. I think they'll finish in the top 40. All right, Scotty, we are going to wrap it up here on the basketball podcast of Mid-America. I want to thank you so much for joining us. As Scotty Borderline giving you tons of insight. You can check out all of his stuff on wholehogsports.com. As he said, he will be traveling to North Little Rock, giving you a fantastic recap of the game. It's like you'll be there anyway or watching it on TV with Scotty Borderline giving you the recap.
And also, before Seth signs off, he got married over the weekend, and I didn't want to go this whole podcast without bringing that up. So congratulations.
Well, I appreciate it. Yep. Married a beautiful, beautiful woman. And so we are happy.
I saw the tweet that she dug up from like 2014. She was like, well, I'm going on my first real life date. And then she, like, 5 years later, it's like, oh, plot twist, I married the guy.
Yeah, exactly. It was a good time, you know, five years together. Actually, December 18th was the anniversary of our first date. So nice. Back in 2014. So there you go. All right. Well, thank you for joining us. As we said, we'll be back. I think we'll be back next week. Short week, though, with Christmas in the middle of it. And going to preview a little bit of that Arkansas and Indiana game. Until then, Seth Campbell and Scotty Borderline signing off. We will see you later.